Hey everybody, welcome into another episode of Investing in Real Estate. It's the cleverly titled podcast because this is the show where we talk about investing in real estate. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And this is the show where we invest in real estate and where we focus on buy and hold real estate. That means you buy a property, typically, in the C-class, B-class neighborhoods where we like to buy our properties, and you hold them for the rest of your life. That's the goal. And we focus on cash flow. So with a high return on investment, that's what we do here. We talk about building legacy wealth. And one of the things that we've had to recently do is, you know, as we've had our different LLCs and we've had our different bank accounts and all that good stuff, there's been a little bit of paperwork that we've had to deal with. And we thought today we would talk about deeding properties over to an LLC. We get that question a lot and people sort of get scared about that process. We thought we would break it all down for you today, right?
Yep, exactly. So the reason we did this is maybe not the same reason that other people will have to do this. And you may have to do this a few times during the life of the ownership of a property. For instance, if you own a property in your own name and you decide, whoops, I don't really want to do that because it doesn't give me the maximum amount of protection, and you transfer it into a corporate entity, well, then you'll have to deed it from your personal name into the LLC. But what if you have a property in an LLC and you want to get a loan or take out the equity and the bank says, well, we're not going to loan to your LLC, then you have to deed it over to your name. Some people choose to do that. That's just one way of doing things. There's several reasons why you need to do that, but I thought we'd go through the process since we just had to do that. We used to own a few of our properties in our personal name, and then we decided we wanted them in an LLC. And we also had, you know, separate businesses that we ran out of our house. For instance, Clayton started a speed reading app. We had, you know, we do speaking engagements, and through our speaking engagements, we have LLCs. And we had a tax accountant a couple of years ago said, put that all into one LLC so that I don't have to do several tax returns. Well, that wasn't an awesome idea because those are separate businesses. And so now we can't sort of funnel our expenses into the appropriate business. And also it's just not like, it's not even a legitimate business, but we just did what the accountant told us to do. So then this year we rejiggered all of our estate and we made it so that we have up to $150,000 in value in each LLC. Now, since we have a portfolio of dozens of properties, we had to split them up. So we had to take it from our transactional business, our turnkey business, and make that its own separate LLC. And then the businesses where we own real estate had to be their own LLCs. And then again, if you wanted to book Clayton and I for a speaking engagement, we wouldn't then bill you through our LLC that owns real estate. That just wouldn't make any sense, right?
Right, because the funds would be coming into that account. Wouldn't make any sense the same place that our rent checks are coming.
Right. But that had been sort of how our accountant wanted us to do that. So we went through Provision, who we've talked about several times on this show, and we said, and they said, okay, this is how we want you to do it. You create an umbrella holding company, and then underneath it is going to be separate LLCs that own these properties. Okay, great. So for the purposes of this show, we're just going to call them Natalie 1, Natalie 2, Natalie 3, even though we don't call things in just my name. But let's pretend, because it's fun to say my name over and over again. So we then took 4 or 5 properties into Natalie 1, 4 or 5 properties into Natalie 2. And so we had to take it out of what was our old LLC that was just like, you know, Morris Fun, let's call it that. I'm just making up names. Morris Fun LLC had been doing like everything fun, right?
Right.
And now we have overarching umbrella LLC, Morris Fun, which owns these property, these LLCs that report to it, which is Natalie 1, Natalie 2, Natalie 3. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes sense. Okay.
Okay. So then the first thing you have to do when you decide to do this is deed the property over from either yourself or your one LLC into the LLC that you want it to be in. You probably can do this yourself with like Rocket Lawyer or something, but I wouldn't. We used a lawyer to do it, or in some places an escrow company. Just depends on the state. But I definitely would have someone do it for you. Even sometimes the lawyer will say, do you want to file this yourself with the county? And I say, no, I do not. This is not something that I want to mess around with doing wrong.
Right.
So you're going to want to make sure that you have someone prepared. And we paid about $100 per deed.
Okay. So $100 per deed, we're transferring them out of where they were all in that one big catch-all bucket and moving them smaller glasses, basically, for the purposes of taxes. Now, because, you know, liability reasons too, right? I mean, let's be honest. Let's say like my speed reading app that I built years ago for the iPad called ReadQuick. You can check it out if anyone wants to. And it would be silly. Well, like that's intellectual property, right? I've like trademarked ReadQuick. I've done a lot of things with it. So for then that to also be in the same account where we own 123 Main Street as a rental property, and, you know, and then the money coming in from app sales from Apple going to the same account as the rent check from 123 Main Street makes no sense. What are the downsides of doing it that way?
Well, what if someone came along and said, you took ReadQuick was my intellectual property and I'm going to sue you now for everything you've got, right? Then you're liable up to everything that's in that LLC. So then
123 Main Street is now part of the lawsuit.
Right. And we could lose it because for that very reason. Hmm. So that's why you want to make sure that that your businesses are sort of like kind businesses. It just, again, it doesn't make sense for like in Morris Fun that we have a turnkey business, plus we own real estate, plus I'm a motivational speaker, right? It there's no sense to that. And the government won't like it because this is less opportunity for them to tax you because they want to tax you appropriately as a speaker, brand,
right,
as they do as a real estate investor, as they do as a turnkey business. Like the rules are very different. Now, here's a question for you, Clayton. I don't know if you know the answer to this or not. Should you use a warranty deed or a quit claim deed?
I don't know the answer to that. So a general warranty deed, of course, is what you would get on the closing of a property. So I know when we buy our rental properties, we get the general warranty deed from the title company and they file that with the county and that's the deed for the property. When you use a quit claim deed, is that when you're just transferring it? What's the difference?
So a quit claim deed is a document that says, I give you any ownership I may have in this property. Now I can give you right now on this podcast, a quit claim deed to the White House. I don't own the White House, but you don't know that. So what I would be doing is just claiming any right I may have to that property. So, you know, have you ever heard the saying, if you believe that, I've got a bridge to sell you?
Right.
That's where this comes from, is that there was a scam back in, I think, the 20s, where people were saying, oh, I'm going to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. So people paid a lot of money and they were quit claim deeded pieces of the ownership of the Brooklyn Bridge from people who actually had no ownership in the Brooklyn Bridge. It doesn't matter. Because you can quit claim deed anything, but that doesn't guarantee that you ever owned it. Hmm. Whereas a warranty deed guarantees that you have the right to sell this thing. Like you're selling your actual interest in the thing. So if you're transferring between LLCs like we just did, quit claim deed is fine because I know for a fact that my LLC did own that thing. So I'm never going to contest that Natalie Fun owned that because I know for a fact it did, because when I bought it, I got a warranty deed. So I can prove all the way back to clear ownership, right?
Right.
But if I were, say, quit claiming it between two people that, you know, I wasn't sure, then you wouldn't want to use a quit claim deed because it doesn't guarantee that you're actually getting anything. Because like I said, you can quit claim deed anything. I can quit claim deed anybody who's listening to this podcast, I can quit claim deed their house. Doesn't mean I own anything, right? It just means like in case I come, you know, I have long lost uncle die and leave me ownership in that house, I've quit claim deed it to somebody else.
Right. Okay.
So when you go to your escrow person or your lawyer, You know, you can ask for either. Usually it doesn't cost much more to do one or the other. Quick claim deed, you know, it's, I don't know. You just ask, like, which one do you think I should use? But if it's between your own entities, it's pretty safe that you're going to have a quick claim deed. Although my mother, who works in escrow, said never do that. For the reasons that I think are probably pretty clear now, right?
Right. Now, there are some tax implications of all this process too, aren't there? When you have, like, if you're transferring a house to your LLC, the transfer then could, like, trigger a reassessment for tax purposes. And, you know, I've heard about this, like, a higher value might be placed on the house during this reassessment, and you may end up having, of course, have to pay higher property taxes. So the county, you want to ask your county clerk if your county must reassess transferred property. Sometimes they do it. And, you know, to me, I don't even know why you would call them and even ask them that question, right? Like, why even call down there and say, hey, by the way, I just want to see if you want to go reassess my property for tax purposes. But
your lawyer will tell you that, because right. We have one of our Pennsylvania properties. The lawyer said, well, they're going to reassess then and charge you transfer tax. And so it's going to be in addition to the $100 fee for me to do it. And then there's a filing fee of like $50 or something, could be up to $100. And then they're going to put an extra $500 on this transfer. So the lawyer should know if you've got someone who's used to doing this, hopefully. But yeah, you might not want to just offer that up to the city.
Right. I mean, yeah, that's, I don't know. You don't need to stir up a hornet's nest if you don't need to. Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. We'll come back out and check your house and see if we want to increase the taxes on that property. Sure. Why not?
Right. We definitely will do that.
I mean, some locations are just much lazier than others, but, you know, not all the time. Also, if you're, as far as income taxes go, if your LLC uses the transfer property to produce income, then, of course, you're going to end up paying tax on that income. But this is much better, of course, than having it in your personal name, because now the LLC will pass the tax liability on to you and the other LLC members. But you're able then to defer that. By having it be in the business, of course, then your taxes are being deferred. You're able to mitigate that with because you're buying real estate and you're doing other things by claiming depreciation. You can depreciate any assets. If you own it in your own name, nada, you can't do that.
Right, exactly right. So, you know, what I had been working on earlier in this year was getting all of our properties into the appropriate LLCs. So finally, you know, you get those deeds, then you go down and get them notarized, and then you record them with the county. And so, you know, we got them notarized, and then we sent them back to the lawyer, the title company that was doing that. They get recorded, and then I get a copy of it. But in the meantime, then I'm going to have to make sure that once that ownership is transferred, I want my insurance policy then transferred into the right name, because if something happens in that property, like a tree falls on the sun porch or whatever, I need to be able to now make that claim because as the rightful owner, because Morris Fun is no longer the owner, it's Natalie Two or whatever, right? So as I was doing that, once I got the recorded deeds, then I called up the insurance company and said, my insurance agent didn't have to rewrite the policy. He just changed the name of the owner of the policy. So that was pretty easy. But I had to make sure each one was done. And then I also had to open up a bank account for each one of those. Now, I had those LLCs set up before I transferred the deeds. You can't transfer the deed into an LLC you don't own, clearly. And so that's one other step. And also, you could apply for Natalie to LLC and not get it because maybe someone already has it, right? So you need to make sure that you've got your LLC in place before you do any of this. And then once you have that, you'll have your certificate of either a certificate of good standing or whatever other documents the state will send you, plus your FEIN, which is your federal employee identification number. So you'll need to send that to the bank in order to just open a bank account as well.
Sounds complicated.
It's a lot. It's a lot of work. Like I said, that's why I've been at this for a long time, and I've just had to, I mean, if you only have a few properties, this is not that hard to do, but you know, once you've got a pretty good portfolio, then I think I mentioned this document on the podcast a couple of weeks ago that I had this Excel document called due diligence, where I just have all the name of our property, who which ownership it's now going into, like which LLC. Do I have the deed? Do I have the insurance? Is that all current? I just make, you know, just go through to make sure I have it. Even though I have it sort of on recurring payment, I want to make sure, do I have the lease? And then have I notified the insurance agent and the property manager of the new LLC ownership? Because the property manager needs to know that too. Because if the property manager gives you a check in Morris Fund, Morris Fund doesn't own that anymore, right? So now that check for the rent needs to go into Natalie too, because that's the new owner. So not only do you need to notify the property manager, but give him the new bank information as well.
So how do we prepare so we don't have to end up like doing a whole switcheroo later? Like, what are the best ways for us to prepare in the beginning, right? When a lot of our investors who buy properties through us, you know, I don't want to say encourage them because we're not financial advisors, but we sort of ask them when they select a property with us, we'll say, you know, what name do you want on title? And
right.
What we're saying is, do you want to put this in your own name? And as Tom Wheelwright has been a guest on the show many times, what is his lesson there?
That if you're a sole proprietor, meaning you own things in your own name, that they joke, they make fun of you as tax accountants. They say, anyone who buys things in sole proprietorship, we call it, someday you'll lose everything. That's
yeah. Don't buy it in your own name. Now there are ways to do that where you need to get financing or things like that. So you're buying it, you need traditional financing, and of course a traditional bank, you know, like your local community bank. And we work with a lender who will do that where you need to buy it in your own name. You're allowed to have up to 10 mortgages in your own personal name. And I believe, what is it jointly? Is it like 20? As a married couple, or is it 15? I always forget these
mortgages.
Numbers. Yeah, and they're looking to extend it so that you could individually have up to 25 properties in your own name mortgages in your own name. Now, in order to close on the properties, right? But then you can transfer them after closing to an LLC. Now, I've talked to a number of bankers, and a banker that we work with has said, in his 11 years of doing this, he's only seen that trigger a due on sale clause, meaning that the mortgage company's like, hey, wait a second, we saw, you know, we ran title on the property that we lent you money on, and we noticed that you transferred it to an LLC. And he said, even in that case, they've only just asked them to transfer it back. They're not asking for them to pay the mortgage in full. He said, you know, here's the thing. Banks do not want to be in the business of owning property, and they also do not want to file all of the paperwork and pay the exorbitant fees that it costs to foreclose. It's just too much. And then by the time you go through the court, all that procedure, they don't want to do it. So what they'll do is if they notice somehow, because they've pulled title, that you've transferred it to an LLC after you got a mortgage on the property that you're buying, they'll just say, hey, you know, transfer it back, please. Out of the LLC back to your own name. But so anyway, that's the only reason I think you would want to buy a property in your own name is just like if you needed financing or obviously your primary mortgage or something like that.
Right. I mean, these are growing pains that we went through because we went from like two little dinky investment properties to two or three dozen in the span of 4 years, I guess we could say.
Right.
And we didn't know. I mean, in this big expansion, we're learning as fast as we can, but I think I've mentioned this several times, like we couldn't afford to hire ProVision in the beginning of our real estate investment career. That was something that was on our vision board last year for New Year's in 2016, that we're going to do it. We're going to be able to afford it. We're going to make this investment. And so, and I'm so happy that we have, and but you know, we had to fix a lot of what we had done wrong because we didn't know any better. So hopefully people looking to expand their portfolio as quickly as we have, won't have to make these mistakes because like he said, we're not financial advisors. We're just trying to help you go along in our journey.
Right. So setting this up ahead of time, making sure that you're buying properties in an LLC or some other business entity, whether it's a trust or a land trust or some other entity that's not your own personal name.
Right.
And then, you know, putting a number of properties in there, we've sort of revised that. It used to be where we would do like two or three properties, and we're extending that now because it just gets too complicated. At the end of the day, on a property that's worth $50,000, really, you know, to have like multiple LLCs for these, it just gets out of hand. So what we're trying to do is consolidate and put, I think our goal is maybe put about 10 properties in one LLC. Somewhere in that range.
No more than that. So, I mean, I don't intend to open more LLCs in the near future. You know, if you think that your freedom number requires you to have 10 properties, then have two LLCs ready to go and set it up so you've got that holding company. And that way you're ready, because maybe now you have one or two and that's in just one of your LLCs. But, you know, set the systems in place so that you can then fill in the blanks, so that you don't have to then go back and fix it. And, you know, there's a few LLCs we have now in certain states where we don't have properties in those LLCs yet, but we intend to expand our portfolio into those states. And so we just have it. It's you know, ready to go. So ready to buy. But don't tell Clayton that.
Why? Because I'll...
Because you will.
Of course I will. Why wouldn't we? If you listen to our last podcast where we dove deep on acquisitions, so we've made some moves in that regard, behind the scenes of our next real estate purchases, and we talked about, you know, using some money from our home equity line of credit and then rejiggering everything, and of course, you know, we just had tax time as well, and you know, holy smokes, I mean, and we got so many emails from people who were thanking us. I mentioned this on the podcast last time, but. You know, we got a lot of emails from people saying, you know, thanks for helping us get our first property, et cetera, our second property, our third property. My taxes, I used to pay so much in taxes and now I'm paying almost nothing. I can't believe it. And they've sent us like thank you emails and we're like, it's not us. Like, you know, thank the tax code and thank yourself for taking action. But it's a whole different ballgame when you start acquiring properties. Our taxes would have been way higher had we not accumulated additional properties this past year, right?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. So I'll just go over those steps one more time. You have your LLC in place, you're ready to go. And if you want to transfer ownership for whatever reason, you get the deed done by a professional, you get the bank account set up, you let your insurance person know and change the policy owner, and then you let your property manager know so that you get paid in the proper account. Now, if you collect rent on your own, you're going to have to tell the tenant yourself, right? Okay, now you make the check out to this person instead of this person. That's a pain in the butt, but yeah. You could do that. That's another step that you'd have to do. Now, you may or may not, instead of, you know, you may want to just call the clerk at the county tax office and say, can you please send the tax bill now to this owner? And I mean, I don't know if that's the same person who's going to want to do an assessment. Probably not. Usually it's just like a city employee. But I had been missing a few tax bills that didn't come in the mail. But I had them for other properties. So I called the tax person in Indianapolis this week and they were like, oh no, they haven't been printed. You just got the early notice because, you know, the previous properties you had online notification and the new properties I hadn't yet. So they're like, no, they're coming. So that makes me think, I don't know if that's true or not, but that there's just sort of like a, you know, a clerk there who will look into your file for you. I don't think they're going to then trigger any kind of taxation, but I say that not knowing.
Oh, good.
So I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, those they're so busy in there anyway. I mean, we asked them for a copy of our deed. It takes them 3 months to get us. Do you think they're just actively revising this? I mean, I guess, you know, hey, they want taxes, right? They want revenue. So in those areas, I guess maybe they're more proactive. Do you remember in New Jersey when we did the addition to our property and we weren't even done with the addition yet? We had already, you know, filed the permits to do the addition and we're doing all that. The tax guy showed up at our house about 3/4 of the way through the renovation.
Yeah, and they're like, here's what you owe in addition to, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're not going to let it go for 1 second. As soon as they know that there's some improvement on the property, they must have that triggered somehow.
Yeah, of course. Like, hey, we're knocking. It's like, right, New Jersey taxes. I mean, people are always shocked. I mean, New Jersey taxes, I think we were paying $17,000 a year in taxes in New Jersey. And our property taxes in our rental properties, like in Indianapolis and Michigan, are about like $300 a year. $400.
Yeah, I mean, we did just move to a more tax-friendly county in New Jersey, but New Jersey has the county we moved out of had, I think, the second highest tax rate in the country.
Right.
Second only to a county in Connecticut. And as soon as we moved, that property's property taxes went up to, it's now around $24,000. Isn't that crazy?
That's amazing. No wonder people are moving out of states like this and moving, you know, to like Florida and North Carolina and those other places. That's insanity. I mean, yeah, you're right. Connecticut is the highest. New Jersey is second highest, but... You know,
I mean, we, you know, now we're in a place that we pay much less and we get way more house for it.
Right.
So, you know, it's really hard to pay that and then say, like, what am I getting for this? You know, I mean, I loved our house. We had a beautiful house. But we definitely have a lot more space where we are now. So I'm grateful for that.
Well, there you go. So, good wrap up. If anyone has any questions on this, you can check out the show notes page for this episode, which is episode 145. So if you just go to our website, that's Morris, our last name, morrisinvest.com/episode45. You'll have links to the things that we talked about there on the podcast page. So all of those things. And if you are ready to take action and you would like to pick up a rental property and you are ready to start creating passive income, well, call us. That's what we do full time, all day long. And our team is like standing by ready to, you know, book a call with you for 30 minutes. So you just come to our website, click on the schedule a consultation button. And if you're ready to pick up a rental property, you know, properties cost between $40,000, $50,000 roughly. And they produce about, you know, $650 a month, $700 a month roughly. Depends on the size of the property. Jump on the phone with us. Let us know what your plans are. What does your freedom number look like? And we will help you get your first rental property up and running. So you have some cash flow coming in by Mother's Day. That's going to do it for us. You have any final words? Any final thoughts?
No.
No?
I don't. I don't like pearls? When you put me on the spot like
that. I just asked you if you had any final thoughts. It's not exactly. Can you please give us...
tell us the meaning of life now.
Right, can you give us the circumference of a donut?
To play us out. Mm-hmm. Give us to play us out.
And now performing one of our hit songs from Broadway is my lovely wife, Natalie Morris.
Rewind.
Here is
Rewind.
The theme song from Wicked. All right. All right, we'll see you next time, everyone. Join us on our next episode because tomorrow we've got Larry Goins on the show. And Larry actually was one of my mentors many years ago, and he teaches us how to use HUD homes to get started in real estate. If you're more of like a hands-on investor, you kind of want to hit the streets and learn how to go out and find homes maybe in your backyard and make bids and offers on picking up that foreclosure, that HUD home, he's going to teach you how to do that. He is a master at that strategy, and he also has a free giveaway for you. So you don't want to miss tomorrow's episode with Larry Goins. He's a real estate legend in this business. So check that out tomorrow. Until next time, everyone, we'll be back here again tomorrow and then next week for another episode. Have a good one, everyone.